Want to keep your personal number private but still stay connected? With Line 2, you can get a second phone line right on your device with a super simple app and no need for another phone. Whether it's for online shopping, dating, or shielding your main number from spam, Line 2 is an easy way to manage it all. Ready for peace of mind without breaking the bank? Call, text, block, and more for only $9.99. Get started with line2.com/audio or download Line 2 in any app store today. Line 2, your second line simplified.
Wait, wait, wait. Before we start, just want to make sure we're clear here. While this podcast talks about sobriety, mental health, and addiction, it is not meant to replace professional medical advice. Welcome to Sisters in Sobriety.
I'm Kathleen.
And I'm Sonia.
And we're ex-sisters-in-law, brought together in marriage and bonded through our sobriety journey.
Join us as we talk sobriety, addiction, and everything in between. You're in for quite a ride. And our Substack is buzzing with amazing content, from creative mocktail recipes to insightful courses and reflective exercises. There is something for everyone. Don't miss out. It's a great way to add some extra joy and depth to your journey. Check it out. Welcome to Sisters in Sobriety. Today we are speaking with Dr. Donna Marks, a distinguished psychotherapist, addictions counselor, educator, and author with over 3 decades of experience.
Dr. Marks has dedicated her career to helping individuals overcome addiction and achieve personal transformation. She has worked with over 6,000 clients, combining evidence-based psychological principles with spiritual teachings to guide them towards healing and self-discovery. Dr. Marks is the author of several books, including The Healing Moment, Exit the Maze, and Learn, Grow, Forgive.
Her innovative approach centers on the belief that all addictions are substitutes for love, and true recovery is achieved through self-love and understanding. So in this episode, we will delve deep into Dr. Marks's background, explore the themes of her books, and then discuss her unique perspectives on addiction, healing, and personal growth. Welcome, Dr. Marks.
Thank you so much for having me on your show. And I want to tell you that you girls are rocking it. And I'm so happy what you're doing and what you're accomplishing as Sisters in Sobriety. It's awesome.
Thank you.
The world needs young people to get the message out. It's very important.
Well, we can only do it with people like you who actually have the knowledge. Mm-hmm. And Kathleen, she's a psychotherapist too.
But I don't specialize in addictions. I just want to say that. So Dr. Marks, I really look to you as well. So,
well, thank you very much.
So Dr. Marks, what inspired you to pursue a career in psychotherapy and then in addiction counseling?
Well, I think I probably decided that before I arrived on the planet, because I was born into a family with a lot of addiction, and it was very, very challenging and difficult. So I got my training in dysfunctional family and addiction early on. And then I started my own when I was about 16 and decided to get married and have a baby, or have a baby and get married, to be rigorously honest, to start my own dysfunctional family, because I didn't know how to do it much different. I thought I could do better, but with all that damage inside, I had to do a lot of work on myself. But at the time, therapy wasn't very common, but I always wanted to be helping in the helping profession. I knew that from very early on. My friends would confide in me and talk to me, and I majored in psychology, and all my degrees were along those lines. And then after I started being in private practice, my supervisor said, oh, you've got to get a doctorate in education so you can start teaching about addictions and things like that. So that's how it evolved.
I love that, because I sometimes wish that I had known earlier on that I wanted to be a psychotherapist. My evolution came later. But I'm wondering, you shared that you were born into a dysfunctional family and it sort of laid the groundwork for you pursuing a career in psychotherapy. Can you share more about your personal journey? Why addiction? Why did you specialize in that? And how did it influence your professional path?
Well, I think there were a lot of reasons for that. I became dependent early on. My first time I had a cigarette, I wanted the next one before I had 3 puffs, even though I was coughing my lungs out. I got that rush of, oh, thank goodness, everything's okay for the first time. And so then later it was alcohol. And that evolved over a period of time. And then narcotics, anything and everything that would get me out of my brain, out of myself. And so, there's two things going on. There's the healer and then there's the unhealed. And that's, I think, the case with a lot of people in the helping professions across the board, whether it's pastors, therapists, or whatever, that there's that component of the person who really does help other people and has that depth and ability to do so. But then we've got to heal ourselves. So that's, I finally, fortunately, hit a bottom early on in my early 30s and got sober. I was sober for 23 years. And then I had breast cancer and was put on OxyContin, and that definitely affected my sobriety and led to drinking again. And that's one of the reasons I wrote the books that I've written, because we need to understand that there's just one addiction, and it's that empty hole inside that we're trying to fill. And if we don't recognize that, we're screwed, because we're always going to be vulnerable to being in that position of not. And it was innocent. For everybody who gets addicted, it's not their fault. Things are made to get you addicted. It's intentional. So we know that for sure about OxyContin now, all the evidence that came out. But it start with cigarettes. They put chemicals in it like sugar to make it more addictive. Sugar has so refined now that it has the same effect on the frontal lobe as crack cocaine. And we've got a huge porn epidemic. It's a massive problem with young men and young women. 60% with women, and 90%, high 90s for men who've tried it, and a large percentage of those people become addicted. And then we've got technology and alcohol and drugs and gambling and la 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 love and sex. So it's just, but everything is designed, to put in the brain programming, and then once it hits you get the dopamine, it's all over. Anybody is subjected to it.
I'm really always cognizant when I have any sort of like injury that I won't take any type of, because I do worry about that. I think it's just going to be the next in a line of things that I'm addicted to. So
Well, and
thank you.
actually, I mean, there's a whole subtopic on that that we could go into, but what I see a lot, not a lot, but I see is that at least here, I'm in Canada, Dr. Marks, but the medical profession doesn't really necessarily always think about if someone has a history of addiction and then giving them narcotics for like even just standard knee replacements. Like I have heard stories of, a gentleman, for example, not a client, but a gentleman in his 70s getting a knee replacement and being given narcotics and had a history of alcoholism and then started drinking again, because they didn't ask the questions.
Well, even if you do ask the questions, I had a family member who had a knee replacement, exactly what you just said. And the nurse told him, here's your prescription for Percocet. And he said, I'm in recovery. I can't take that. And she said, you have to take it, because if you don't take it, then the pain won't be managed and you won't be properly rehabilitated. And he said, no, I'm really not supposed to take that. And she insisted and made him feel foolish. And this was about 10 years ago. And I told the person, this is not a good idea. You're in recovery. And he said, well, I've never had a problem with pills. I said, you haven't had a drink in quite a while, and that pill is going to hit your brain in a whole new way. You don't realize. And sure enough, he got addicted. Is it time yet? Is it time yet? And so he had to go through that whole experience. I wouldn't call it necessarily a relapse, but he definitely went through a terrible, torturous experience and was a mess for a couple of weeks. And he took the pills for about a week and got off of them instead of the 90 pills that he was prescribed with one refill of 90.
That's so interesting. So I'm a dentist. I went to dental school in like the very early 2000s, and that was the only method we were taught of pain management, was to write a script for Vicodin, and not for like three pills, but yeah, for 30. And so I know that that's changed since, but that actually brings me to our next question, because I wasn't trained at all in the idea of addiction or even really drug seeking. behavior, like how to recognize it. But is that what led you to develop the chemical dependency training program at Palm Beach Community College?
Well, because I had been going to therapists, and one of them for quite a while, and I talked about the, actually a marriage at the time that we drank a lot and I was concerned about it. And anybody I talked to had no knowledge, no awareness of the signs and symptoms of alcoholism or the effects of being raised in an alcoholic environment. And so once I got treatment at Hazleton in Minnesota and became much more aware and educated myself, I decided to develop a training program at the local community college for people to be get CEUs or even to get certified as addictions counselors. And that was for my doctoral dissertation. And part of it, we had to do an outreach type of thing, send out questionnaires randomly to different professionals in the community. And just basic questions on addiction, particularly alcoholism. And one person scored a 76. Everyone else flunked it. It was basic information, signs and symptoms of alcoholism. And not only that, they were angry. You can't say someone's an alcoholic based on, you know, they've had 3 DUIs and, you know, that kind of thing. So, ignorance.
Wow.
And they just, and a lot of therapists still don't. When one of the things that contributed to my relapse, I was in psychoanalysis. And I'm also a psychoanalyst. Part of my training, it was that I had to have 4 years of psychoanalysis. Mm-hmm. And she kept insisting that I couldn't be an alcoholic. And I was trying to educate her, and it was one of the reasons that led to my drinking, because I thought, well, maybe I'm not. Mm-hmm. So it's really, really dangerous.
Yeah.
Between the pharmaceuticals and people who don't understand it that are in the field of psychotherapy and physicians. And now it's really dangerous because we're treating addiction with addiction. Addiction is a brain disorder now, which means there's 4 billion people on the planet that are suffering from some form of addiction, and they're all born with brain disorders. Mm. Give me a break. But that's what they're treating, no matter what the addiction, they're treating it, and then they're treating it with things that are brain altering. So I'm very concerned about that also, and I'm very outspoken about it and very unpopular because of it. But I think that sometimes people need medication for sure. You have a psychotic disorder or a major depressive bipolar disorder, you definitely need medication. But it's the first protocol now to get put people on. Also, if you're being detoxed off of alcohol, you definitely need to be on a proper benzodiazepine or alternative. However, just because people come into treatment doesn't mean they need to be on a mood-altering medication permanently. And a lot of these temporary medications that are supposed to stabilize people, they don't get off of them. Mm-hmm. So I'm really concerned about the quality of recovery these days, and that I don't see people staying sober. There's also the new trend that, oh, you can be on medical marijuana, and that's not sobriety either. So as you can see, I have very strong opinions about this, not because I'm opinionated, but because I've been working in the field for so long and I see what's happening to these people that are doing these things, and it's disastrous.
Donna, so there is this theory in AA, right? That if you're on antidepressants or you're on benzos, then you're not sober. Is that sort of what you're getting at? Like, do you feel if you're on antidepressants, or is it specifically benzos, which are more addictive? What do you think?
Well, benzodiazepines are very addictive. The research, all you have to do is look it up. Of course, you're going to get conflicting opinions about that. You have to look at who's doing the study. Is it being funded by Big Pharma, or is it an independent study? But they are very addictive. I've seen the quality of recovery. Sometimes people take them temporarily because they're going to be having a surgery or something like that. They don't get addicted. But any mood-altering drug for an addict is potentially addictive. That's different than antidepressant that isn't mood-altering. Mm-hmm. So I'm not a psychiatrist. I try to stay off of the medical opinion thing. But as I said, if they have a schizophrenia, bipolar disorders, severe depression, then they definitely need the medications. But those are not mood-altering medications. Mm-hmm. Those are just regulating the brain where it's not properly regulated.
Yeah, there was an article in the New York Times written by somebody this weekend who had bipolar disorder and who had gone through a bunch of different trials of medications and now has decided to be medication free. And I found that very interesting. And she knew it was a controversial opinion, but
Right.
it was
Well, I
interesting.
honor her, and I think that properly done, she's making a very good decision. There's a psychiatrist down in Miami who's written books. Her name, I believe, is Kelly Brogan, and she does not ever write a prescription for anything. She treats everything through psychotherapy, diet, and meditation, yoga, and see, foods are such a problem, and food addiction is a very serious problem right now because of what they're putting in the food to make it more addictive, particularly with the high fructose corn syrups and things like that is almost in everything that isn't fresh. So these chemicals affect the neurochemistry of the brain. And so with bipolar disorder and even just everyday living, I mean, I know if I eat something, I can feel it in my body and my brain, just as an overall mental health issue. I teach people this is a sacred organ. It's your command center. It's the most important part of your body. Everything else can you can work around, but this you can't. And so you get your heart repaired, you can get your liver detoxed. There's a lot of things you can do with your other organs, but your brain is the most important, and so it needs to be as clear and honored and treated as lovingly as possible, because if you do that, then your mind will work right as well. And so I commend someone who, and it is controversial, but what happens is people, what I've seen over the years is people with bipolar disorders go on and off their medication because they don't like the way it makes them feel or they want to be normal, but they don't regulate their food and their exercise. So they don't, there is a deficiency. And so if you don't compensate for that with that treating your brain with enough healthy self-love, then you probably will not stay well.
This is a common topic that Sonia and I talk about actually quite a bit because I struggle with sugar addiction big time. But my vice of choice that I'm sober from is cocaine. So it's like a similar effect in the brain, as you mentioned, top of the, top of our podcast. And one of the things, and I'm open about this on our podcast, I have ADHD and I'm medicated for ADHD, but Sonia knows I struggle with that because I feel like I don't want to be on that medication. And so I, in the last 4 months, have completely revamped how I eat and the amount I exercise. And actually on, it was last week, I spoke to my doctor and I'm going down my medications now because I actually feel well, and I feel like the dose I was on was too much now because I'm seeing such a great effect from exercise and like I'm not eating any sugar anymore. I feel such clarity and focus. And I know I'm a premenopausal woman and I know there's hormonal factors in that as well.
Yes.
So I'm not saying that people should not be on medication if it is life-saving for them, if it's helping them. But I'm just saying from my personal experience, I am feeling like Sonia knows I've been trying to experimenting with coming off of my ADHD medication, and now I'm doing it in a way that is actually supported. So I'm not just cold turkey going off of it. I'm actually doing other things in my life to support my brain.
Good for you. So you're treating it like that sacred command center that it deserves to be treated. And yes, we're not telling anybody to go off their medication. We're just trying to increase awareness of, are you on the right medications? Do you need to be on it? Or is it a lifestyle change that, or is it a lifestyle that's causing your problems? I've done so much research in what you said about sugar and cocaine. There's a research study that compares it to crack cocaine, that when it hits the frontal lobe, that more and more and more is automatically. And we really need to understand the effects of these things on our brain, because if we don't, then we're gonna be caught. That's why I call it a maze, just going up and down the different corridors.
Right, exactly. And like you said at the beginning too, it's like there's that space in you that needs to be filled by something. So if it's not going to be for me, let's say it's not cocaine anymore, but then it became sugar, or like I have to also do that emotional work like what is, you know, what's that emotional work as well to fill?
Yeah, the ghosts that live
hungry in, ghost,
and then somebody's you know, quiet or alone, and I got to do something. I got to get something. I got to eat something.
Exactly. Exactly. So sorry, we kind of went off, not off topic, but we diverged from our questions a bit.
Well, these kinds of organic conversations are so good because it's your audience. They're thinking and wanting to know the same things. And the book they can get, I mean, it's packed with research, and it's also packed with a solution of what to do if you have if you're struggling with a bad habit, if you want to call it that, or an addiction. But it's just the food issue is horrendous. So I'm glad you brought it up about the sugar. I mean, it is a tough one because you have to eat, and sugar's in everything, and it doesn't take much. It's like if you bought a bottle of water and it had alcohol in it and you didn't know, and then you can't stay sober because you don't.
Oh yeah.
So
yeah, I couldn't. And I detoxed from sugar for over 3 weeks. I did it under the care of a naturopath because I had really bad symptoms from it, like side effects from detoxing. And after about 2 weeks, I was having a salad. I guess I didn't check the ingredients enough, but I got a splitting headache. I had to go and rest, go to bed. And I was like, what is going on? And I looked at the salad dressing and it had sugar in it, but not even the main, like not even one of the top ingredients. And all this food noise started coming back. I all of a sudden was like, why am I craving a chocolate bar? I haven't craved a chocolate bar in like 2 weeks. And it was because there was a small amount of sugar in the salad dressing.
Yeah, that's a tough one. Yeah. And good for you that you're sticking with that. It's tough for people to admit, gee, I have a food addiction, or I have a sugar. It's a tough one. I've worked with quite a few people, and the resistance is probably the toughest of all. Because, like I said, you still have to eat. So it's like really difficult to manage like you just did. You know, you have to check the ingredients on everything. And then it's easier to be in denial. Like, how could I have a food addiction, or how could I be addicted to sugar? That's ridiculous. Well, when you understand that sugar is a very potent drug, then you can begin to wrap your brain around the concept that it is highly addictive.
So in your book, Dr. Mark's Exit the Maze, you propose that addictions stem from also a lack of self-love. Can you elaborate more on that?
I believe that every addiction is a substitute. So instead of, let's say I feel nervous, or I feel stressed, or I feel depressed, or my boyfriend broke up with me, or whatever. So the first thing I'm thinking of is have a cigarette, or have a drink, or have a joint, or do something to get out of that pain, get out of that feeling. Or it could just be that I'm so uncomfortable being alone, but when I pour that drink, then that goes away. So what I'm saying there is that feeling that the addiction gives me is, it feels good. I mean, there's no doubt about it. When I'm high, it feels good. I'm out of my mind. I don't have to feel those feelings. I don't have to deal with what's uncomfortable. The problem is that I'm not resolving anything, and I'm not learning how to love myself. And what I like to tell people, and it always gets a really positive reaction, is that we have to go back in time to the time where even before the baby is born, that, you know, the baby is being nurtured in utero, is wanted, is the mom's taking care of herself so that those cells are getting the best that they can get. And then when that baby's born, she's holding it. Baby's needs are met. You know, there's that eye-to-eye contact and emanating love to that little newborn baby. And they're searching for that. You look at any newborn baby, they want that eye contact right away. And then they're being held and cuddled. And the whole time that they're young, they're being fed when they need to be fed. They feel warm. It's safe. I like it here. And that hole doesn't form. There's enough food. There's enough affirmation. I'm okay. It's good here. I like it here. It's safe here. And then they start wanting to walk and play, and their needs are met. For people like me, there was some gaps in that system. And what happened was that there was some neglect. By the way, I have no animosity towards my parents whatsoever because I did the work and I did the healing, and I'm so grateful that I can show up as the best daughter I can be for my mother, who is currently in hospice care at 93. But
Do you remember when I talked about True Diagnostics' True Age Test? Well, I took it myself and the results blew my mind. I found out I was actually 39 years old biologically, while I'm 46 chronologically. But what was really eye-opening were the areas where I was on the borderline, like my blood sugar and cholesterol, and True Diagnostic gave natural recommendations to lower both of those. It matters because research shows that if your biological age is even just 5 years older than your actual age, your risk of developing diseases like cancer or heart disease can jump by as much as 50%. But the good news is, almost 90% of biological aging is in your hands. It's driven by things like your lifestyle, your habits, and your environment. The True Age test didn't just give me a number. It showed how quickly my heart, brain, liver, and immune system are aging. And that was also eye-opening. I discovered that my brain is biologically younger, but my lungs need improvement. So I started doing some type of cardio daily. And honestly, I feel so much better knowing how my systems are aging so I can do something about it. The test itself was so easy and convenient. I did it from home. There was no doctor, no needle, just a quick, painless finger prick. So you send off that tiny sample in a prepaid package, and in about 2 to 3 weeks, you'll get a detailed online report about your aging and health. It's fast and hassle-free. So if you care about protecting your health and want to find out what your real age is, head over to True Diagnostic and use my code CIS2025 to get 20% off your entire order or subscription. That's truediagnostic.com and use CIS2025 at checkout to get 20% off. Your future self will thank you.
6 months from now, you could be running a 5K, booking that dream trip, or seeing thicker, fuller hair every time you look in the mirror. Through Hers, you can get dermatologist-trusted, clinically proven prescriptions with ingredients that go beyond what over-the-counter products offer. Whether you prefer oral or topical treatments, Hers has you covered. Getting started is simple. Just fill out an intake form online, and a licensed provider will recommend a customized plan just for you. The best part? Everything is 100% online. If prescribed, your treatment ships right to your door. No pharmacy trips, no waiting rooms, and no insurance headaches. Plus, treatments start at just $35 a month. Start your initial free online visit today at forhers.com/talk. That's forhers.com/talk. Compounded products are not FDA approved or verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. Price varies both on product and subscription plan. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.
I'm so glad I can just love her and care for her and appreciate that she gave me the gift of life. And my stepfather, I did all the healing with him as well, and my father. So I don't have any grievances, but we do have to face what happened so that we can heal it. And so when that attachment, the attachment isn't with a loving connection with parents and the environment, there's something wrong with me. I'm not capable at 3 years old to say there's something wrong with this God and goddess that are taking care of me. There's something wrong with me. Why are they treating me like this? Or why are they hitting me? Or why aren't they hugging me? Or why are they always telling me nasty things? Or why are they doing that to me? What's wrong with me? So that's the problem that hole begins to develop. And then I go out into the world with all that yucky feeling, and I'm already a candidate. Forget the brain disorder thing. Well, my brain does get disordered from the trauma, and it also gets disordered when the first time I have that cigarette or that drink or that joint or whatever, and I'm out of my mind in comfort. I have substituted now genuine, authentic love of care and cuddle and affirmation and safety and trust with that feeling that takes away all the pain. So that's why I say it's a substitute for love. I have chosen to get the feel good as opposed to doing something that makes me feel good about myself. So instead of drinking that drink, I sit with the feelings. I deal with them. I talk with someone about them. I allow myself to cry. I allow myself to feel mad. And then I get rid of those emotions by working through them, by allowing the tears to come out so that it's gone. People fight that pain like crazy. Mm-hmm. They hold it in and it can't heal. When you cry, your brain's releasing oxytocin. And when you cry, you're getting that toxic waste, I call it, out of your system. But many children have been taught that it's wrong, or they get criticized or punished. So they've learned to hold it in. They don't want to be vulnerable. They don't want to go through that. And then anger, we got a lot of anger going on right now. So there's ways to manage your anger constructively and in a healthy manner, or in a very destructive manner. So when children are taught, you know, they get mad and they throw the toy, you know, I hate you. The parent says, wait a minute, it's okay to be mad. You're angry. You're angry because I said you couldn't, you know, go outside and play right now. But tell me why you're angry. We don't hit, we don't kick, we don't attack, we don't destroy property, we don't hurt people's feelings. We communicate, I'm angry because. And so that gets out. It's no longer trapped inside. And so that's all combined into this perfect storm of learning how to live in here, in the sacred command center, living in a healthy way, mentally and physically, so that you can navigate your way through life and with love, because I'm treating myself, I'm exercising, I'm eating healthy, I'm managing my emotions, I'm dealing with the past and healing it through therapy. And so now I'm navigating through the world as a highly effective person who is coming from self-love and giving out that love, not looking for, I've got to fill this hole kind of feeling all the time.
Mm-hmm. So if Dr. Marks, if you see addiction as a lack of love, how does that challenge the traditional views of addiction recovery?
I don't know that it challenges it. I just think that it takes it to a more palpable level. Because once I can say, do I really want to watch this porn tonight? Because yeah, I'm going to get that hit, but there's going to be a price to pay. I'm going to get that feeling, that substitute, but then I'm going to have that awful feeling. And then I'm going to wonder why I'm depressed. I'm going to wonder why I'm anxious. I'm going to wonder why my brain is not quite right. And so maybe I want to read a book, listen to a meditation tape, watch a podcast, watch the Sobriety Sisters, do something that is, if I were the parent and I were the little child and I were the parent of that little child, what would I would be teaching that little person? You know, wouldn't I just say, here, come here, let me wrap my arms around you and cuddle you and let's read your nighttime story, or, you know, let's have a nice healthy snack, or let's talk about this. You're upset. Let's talk about this. Mm. Would I want to do that? I might not get that immediate gratification, but I get the long-term gratification. Long-term. Mm-hmm. No side effects.
Yeah.
No highs and lows. No, why did I do that again? You know, I'm never going to do that again. Why? But those are the choices. So that's people. It's harder to learn how to love yourself as an adult. No doubt about it. But when, like you're saying, to come down off some of these meds and stop sugar, it's not comfortable because you're giving up that bottle, so to speak, you know, the baby bottle in a way. You're learning how to be in there with yourself. But then when you were talking about it, you're radiating. Self-love feels good. So you're getting that long-term benefit of that behavior change. That I deserve to be loved, and nobody can love you more than you love yourself. Nobody can give you what you can't give yourself.
That is very true. That is very true. So to segue into that, what can you give some examples of practical steps that you might recommend for replacing addictive behaviors with acts of self-love?
So I have I don't know if it's on my webpage or not. I'm happy to send it to anybody. And in the healing moment, they put 77 of the items in there. But I have 100+ ways to self-love. I have a handout that I give people that I work with, and I'm happy to send it to anybody that would like to have it. They just need to email me at drdonnamarks@gmail.com, and I will send it to them. But so starting with waking up in the morning, kind of looking around and feeling grateful. Grab the blankets and hug yourself in the blankets and be grateful for that pillow. And I start my morning off every morning with prayer. And I'm not a big meditator. I try to stay in a meditative state, be aware and conscious. I'm happy most of the time, even when really uncomfortable things are happening. And this didn't happen overnight. I taught myself how to say, this is good. I don't like it, but it's good. There's a reason for this. I don't know the whole big picture. There's a reason for this. And I'm just going to embrace this experience. And so it's progress, not perfection. But even accepting our defects and saying, it's okay, you know, I'm learning, I'm growing, and that's what counts. So starting with first thing in the morning and then eating healthy, and I exercise. I have a pretty fairly rigorous, reasonable exercise program. I like to go to Orange Theory a couple times a week and Pilates a couple times a week. So I'm exercising 4 to 5 times a week pretty rigorously. And then I eat really healthy, try to do organic as much as possible, but I'm not rigid about it. I don't have a rigid diet, but I do have a healthy diet, a very mindful diet of protein and lots of fruit and vegetables, and try to make sure I don't eat sugar because, like I said, I feel it when I do. I have not had a sugar addiction, but I could have one because I've noticed from my patterns in the past, when I'd eat it, I'd want more. And then before you know it, you're thinking about it, like you said, all the time. So today, encourage people to stay off of sugar. Watch the caffeine, because some people get very addicted to caffeine, and then they get, you know, almost all mental health. I just want to say this before I forget. Almost all mental and physical health is because of addiction. I have the research to back this up. You take the number one killers, which are stroke, heart disease, and cancer, and now diabetes, and they are almost always caused. There is a genetic component, I'm not denying that, but they're almost always caused by alcohol, drugs, sugar, and trans fats. Have been consumed to the point that it's caused damage to specific organs. Only 3% of all dementias, all Alzheimer's, are from genetics. Even if you have a heart disease in your family, you can control that with diet. So it is. Now, I know that Kennedy's talking a lot about this and they think he's a kook, but he's 100% correct. He's 100%. Yeah. I've been saying it for a long time. The research is there. It's in black and white. And it just common sense will tell you, if you're putting low-grade fuel in your car, it's not going to run the same as, you know, you put the right kind of, if I put, you know, the wrong gas in my car, it's not going anywhere.
I wonder if you even throw in, like, people are addicted to screens, right? So, like, let's say they're not fueling their body, and then they live a sedentary lifestyle because they're coming home after work and they're just laying on the couch and watching TV or gaming, or because their brains are addicted to the screen. That would further support that theory.
Yes. Yes. So one of the things that people can do is, what, you know, read books. Like, there's something sacred about turning pages and just looking around and being grateful, doing back to the 100+ ways of love, you know, offering to help out a neighbor, running an errand, sometimes doing things you don't really feel like doing, but it's going to make you feel good to do it for someone else. Or even for yourself. And so there's just a list of 100 things, and I guarantee that people will do those, like take 3 or 4 of those every day and do it, do all 100 of them. I guarantee they will not be the same person at the end of those 100 things.
Donna, this is something that Kathleen and I have talked about a lot, but how do you feel in that context about the GLP-1? So like the Ozempics that are actually creating the behavioral change, but it's still like a medication, right?
Right. I'm very cautious about medications that human beings haven't been using for a long time. I know they had the research on mice and things like that, but I don't know. I mean, I'm glad that people who have obesity are able to lose weight and be healthier, but the addiction isn't being treated. So
right.
That's one component. And then when I talk to people, I don't have many patients on it, but I have some friends that are on it, and they say they don't really feel any better. And I'm like, well, you don't feel better about losing 50 pounds? And I'm glad I lost the weight, but I don't feel any better. So I don't know. You know, I think that if they're not being treated for the addiction, the psychological components of the food addiction, then they're probably not going to feel better. And that's not something that usually the doctors are recommending, that they get therapy along with it. I'll be interested now the long-term effects on the brain from the medication, because they're really, it's doing something to your brain that you eat very little and you're full, you don't want any more. You can eat whatever you want, but you don't want very much of it. And I think that's a good skill to have anyhow, of self-love, that I'm going to eat less amounts of healthy foods, or I can eat whatever I want as long as it's in moderation. But I have mixed emotions. I'm very happy that people's health are better for it, you know, physical health, but I don't know about the brain and the long-term effects of it on the brain. I just don't know. Time will tell.
And I guess, Sonia, what you said, you said it creates behavior change, and I think it does when you're on it, but not when you're off of it necessarily. So the behavior change is, I'm not saying everybody, but it's often people go back to their old habits, right? So the shift actually hasn't happened only when they're on the medication.
Right. No, because they're not being treated for the addiction that they have.
Yeah, I think you're not learning the skill,
right?
Of how to stop eating before you're full because you're full because of the medication. Yeah, I agree.
The
skill
of loving yourself and putting the things in your body that it was designed to run on best and most efficiently for your muscles and your heart and your lungs and your brain to have the most efficient fuel. If you're not taught that, then... Because they're told you can eat whatever you want. You just and it's true. I see people eat whatever they want, and they just don't eat much of it, which is a very good skill. But like you're saying, okay, now the pills are gone or the shots are gone. Now what?
So switching to The Healing Moment, your other book, you talk about how trauma and pain can serve as the doorways to enlightenment and happiness. Can you explain that to us a little bit?
Sometimes that's what it takes for the door to, for us to knock on the door. You know, the door is always open, but you have to knock on the door. And sometimes it takes pain to get us to be willing to knock on the door. The trauma, for me, I've had a lot of it in my life for many, many years. Different forms. Some of it, you know, as probably most of it as an adult was self-inflicted because of reenacting my childhood trauma in some form or another, but certainly wasn't my doing in my childhood. Sorting through all that and using those experiences now to help others, to be compassionate. Listen, if I can heal and I can be happy and addiction free, believe me, anybody can. Through the gamut. And so that's what I mean when I say it can be turned into something very positive, that I don't live in the trauma. I sometimes I'm triggered because something will happen that hits that old wound or nerve, but those old nerves and wounds are healed. And so I don't have to respond in the same way. And I can go, oh, this isn't reality. You know, this person isn't betraying me. It just feels like it because of somebody else who did betray me. And or maybe they are betraying me, but I can sort it out and I can discuss it and I can make decisions based on loving myself and others, as opposed to just being at the effect of all that in the past. And then all those experiences, that's how AA is, why it's so wonderful, because people are using their experiences to help others.
Right.
And then it has meaning. It's no longer just a terrible, horrible thing that happened. It has meaning. And it's really elevating the consciousness of the whole world. The 12 steps are an amazing process of beautiful spirituality, because it doesn't cram anything down anybody's throat. It's like, you find your own higher power. We don't care what it is. Just find it. Mm-hmm. You're not it. Mm-hmm. So you don't have to do anything other than find something. I tell people, like, for me, it was like the sky and the ocean and the stars and just the sense that there was something out there and in me, something in me that was trying to guide me, and I needed to learn to listen to it. So that's good enough. Love to me is a higher power.
What role do you think forgiveness plays in healing from past trauma?
Well, for me, it's very important. I don't tell anybody they should or need to forgive, but it's mm-hmm. a natural process. It just happens naturally mm-hmm. when we let go of the pain. Mm-hmm. When we face the pain and process the pain and let go of it.
It's interesting, too, that it's a step. I guess if you looked at amends, the step in AA as forgiveness followed by the action, that is a pretty integral part of the process.
Yes. Because bottom line, and I do talk about this in all my books, because I am a student of A Course in Miracles, when I'm not forgiving, I'm down deep blaming myself for something. Mm-hmm. Even as a child, what's wrong with me? What did I do wrong? Why was I even born? You know, those are questions of self-blame, really. Mm-hmm. Rather than saying my environment is faulty, there's something defective in the parenting here. I have no concept of that at age two. Mm-hmm. So I'm already saying it's me. And so later on, when I keep getting involved with the wrong types of people, for me, I'm not saying they're wrong, just for me, then it's my fault. I keep doing the same thing over and over again, you know, and then the therapists tell them that too. When are you going to learn? When are you going to do? Sometimes therapists fire people because they keep doing the same thing over and over again. That's why I wrote Learn, Grow, Forgive. I teach people, like, let's extract the essence out of this. What did you learn this time that you didn't know before? And how can you be more loving to yourself? It's always in the voice, you know, it's learning how to say how you feel and what you need and what you want, and to resolve conflicts with love. Yeah. So the better people get at that, and protecting their hearts in a healthy way. Like, I'm not turning my heart over to just anybody here. Mm-hmm. You know, I can love you, but I can keep my heart close. And then once I realize that this is a safe place to expose it and hand it over to you, and you've earned that because you are worthy of it, I'm worthy of my heart being sacred. Mm-hmm. And I want to be sure you're worthy of it also. But I can still love you, but we're just not going to have that kind of connection. You know? So these are the kinds of things that mm-hmm. I try to help people, rather than judge them and make them wrong for repeating the same behaviors, whether it's an addiction or bad choices or bad financial decisions. You're getting it. Like, look. Last relationship lasted 7 years of abuse. Now you're down to two, and you got out of it. You know, so you, this one was 6 months.
Yeah.
So progress, not perfection.
That's so true. So, Donna, just switching gears a little bit, while you were talking, I was thinking, how can we distinguish between a new healthy habit or a new potential addiction?
Well, the new healthy habits, you're not having negative consequences. That's a difference. Mm-hmm. If you're having negative consequences, it's not a healthy habit.
Okay. So even exercise, if you're exercising and you're like, you've hurt your knee and you just keep exercising, or you keep, that would be unhealthy.
Yes. When I quit smoking, I started doing extreme bicycle riding, and then I was running marathons, and it was too much at times, and I didn't realize I was just transferring one addiction for another. Mm-hmm. So now exercise is rigorous, but it's very modulated, and, you know, just it's a very positive thing. There's no torn hamstrings or anything. I can't walk for 3 days or something like that. Oh, if I don't get my 6 mile run today, I'm a mess. Well, that's a negative consequence. Mm-hmm. Like, we have to be flexible in life. Sometimes we can't run. It's okay. Mm-hmm.
What is the root of it, right? Because if you're exercising rigorously every day, and if you can't run because it fills something up inside of you, then that's the negative, right? But if it's like, I am moving my body because I feel good. It's healthy for my body. I have better mental well-being. But oh, if I have to travel one day, let's say, and I can't get in that 6-mile run, then it's okay. Maybe I'll just like move my body by being at the airport or whatever, like to get that movement in. So it's how it's approached, I guess, like the root of it. Yeah.
Without the rigidity.
Right.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Well, it's been such a pleasure to have you on, Dr. Marks. Thank you so much.
Thank you for joining us. This is wonderful that you girls are doing this show and sharing the message.
Thank you. Yeah, we really enjoy doing it. We really enjoy having amazing experts on like you. Where can people find you, Dr. Marks?
I have a website, drdonnamarks.com, and I write a blog every week. I think there's probably 300 blogs on the site now. Wow. They're free. I just want to get the message out. And they're on spirituality, addiction, mental health, sometimes just general things. It's Veterans Day, and let's remember to honor people who've given their body parts in their lives to other people's freedom. So I try to keep them very positive and inspirational. And to bring us all together instead of all this separation. We're all here. We're all just kids. We're all learning to kind of have a love-a-thon instead of a hate-a-thon. It's okay that we're not all alike.
Yeah, it is, definitely.
I try to really elevate to that spiritual and psychological consciousness that makes people feel good.
Well, thank you so much for coming on our show today. And thank you all for listening to Sisters in Sobriety. And we will see you next week.
This was Sisters in Sobriety.
Thank you for listening and being with us today.
If you want to learn more about sobriety and meet your community, find us at sistersinsobriety.substack.com.
Are you a sister in sobriety? Then reach out on social media. We'd love to hear from you.
If you're feeling generous, leave us 5 stars and a review and follow us wherever you listen.
You'll never miss an episode. Until next time.
Six months from now, you could be running a 5K, booking that dream trip, or seeing thicker, fuller hair every time you look in the mirror. Through Hers, you can get dermatologist-trusted, clinically proven prescriptions with ingredients that go beyond what over-the-counter products offer. Whether you prefer oral or topical treatments, Hers has you covered. Getting started is simple. Just fill out an intake form online, and a licensed provider will recommend a customized plan just for you. The best part? Everything is 100% online. Prescribed, your treatment ships right to your door. No pharmacy trips, no waiting rooms, and no insurance headaches. Plus, treatments start at just $35 a month. Start your initial free online visit today at forhers.com/listen. That's forhers.com/listen. Compounded products are not FDA approved or verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. Price varies based on product and subscription plan. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.